All right. We're running actually a little bit ahead of schedule. So I'm going to start without further ado on the section of the program, which we are going to devote to the theme, Media Under Siege. And, of course, we are going to start with that medium over which we are broadcasting at this precise moment in chronological time, to wit, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. We have here, according to this communique which came over the internet this morning, the first documented account of overt censorship here at WBAI since the so-called Christmas coup. And I should say that the only reason that it's overt censorship is because the censored party has chosen to come forward. Otherwise, it would have remained covert. So, here, this came over the internet today from over the Pacifica Reporters Against Censorship and Save Pacifica list. Friends, WBAI producer Peter Beauchamp announced on the air this morning that his work has been censored. A 25-year WBAI veteran and award-winning producer, Beauchamp dropped off his year-end highlights reel to be played on New Year's Day. When the show finally aired, roughly 1.5 minutes of it had been cut out without his knowledge or permission. According to Beauchamp, the removed sound includes interim general manager Utrecht Leeds' comments which she made on air in the early morning hours of December 23rd during the takeover of WBAI. He said Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman's voice had also been truncated and altered as she spoke about the firings of program director Bernard White, Sharon Harper, and station manager Valerie Van Isler. Quote, the party line from Utrecht Leeds and from Bessie Wash is that the programming is not going to be affected, that everything's going fine, that there's no Gestapo here at the station, that it's an internal issue, Beauchamp said. Meanwhile, it's the first time in over 25 years that I've ever had my program edited for content. Beauchamp is widely respected in the music industry and has won more awards than any other producer at WBAI. He has worked for, among others, ABC News, Amnesty International, Motown Records, U.S. News and World Report, and Warner Brothers. The censorship is reminiscent of that which spread through the network after the KPFA Berkeley lockout in 1999. Then, to block stories about Berkeley, many Save Pacifica managers fired producers, interrupted programs in midstream, sabotaged their own air sounds, and arbitrarily cut up programs like the national news. Democracy Now! Is reported to have been pulled in midstream from Pacifica station WPFW in, that is the one in Washington, isn't it? PFW, yeah. Because its host, Amy Goodman, was reading a front-page article from the San Francisco Chronicle on the crisis. At the time, Pacifica Executive Director Bessie Wash was WPFW's general manager. Similarly, it is said that Pacifica's leadership refuses to put up the on the Pacifica website or make available for sale the July 14, 1999 edition of Democracy Now! Because it deals with the KPFA lockout. In Los Angeles, it has been reported that KPFK News Director Frank Stoltz resigned in April 2000, citing, in part, the repeated breaches of journalistic ethics at the station. Stoltz told a public meeting in Los Angeles last year that he regrets not having resigned at the moment KPFK management interfered with his reporting in the Pacifica crisis in 1999. Quote, in Southern California, KPFK listeners could read about the Berkeley crisis on the front page of the Los Angeles Times and in other major newspapers, but they found little information on their own station. Management clumsily tried to keep it under wraps, wrote KPFK reporter and Pacifica stringer Robin Yurovich. Yurovich and KPFK General Manager Mark Shub also objected to something she wrote in a small weekly newspaper, Random Lens, that was critical of Pacifica. Yurovich says she was then banned from the station for a period of time. Critics at that time also noted that the Nation magazine or the New York Times or The Economist or Le Monde Diplomatique recognized the news value of the 1999 Pacifica crisis. They pointed out that the censorship in Pacifica was not lost on the Washington Post, which referred to the Pacifica's actions as, quote, cowardly radio and Soviet-style journalism, end quote. So there we are, giving fodder to the corporate media to, bash the left as being, Soviet-style journalism. How depressing. The altering of Beauchamp's work was the first known act of content censorship since the takeover at WBAI began Christmas weekend. It would appear that the strike against Pacifica National that started a year ago to combat rampant censorship throughout the network was not in vain. And I believe that that's the news reporter strike, which this communique is referring to. Please see a description below of the Pacifica station WPFW when Bessie Wash was WPFW's general manager for a complete chronology of censorship prepared by the striking Pacifica News Network reporters. Go to www.savepacifica.net/strike. Please make your voices heard. Onward, Eileen Sutton, banned WBAI unpaid news reporter. Pacifica reporters against censorship. And the referred to statement below reads, Washington Post decries censorship at Pacifica. Radio Review column calls WPFW one of the, quote, most egregious censors at Pacifica. Excerpted from on WMZQ, more twang for the bucks, by Frank Ahrens, Washington Post staff reporter, Tuesday, January 11th, 2000, page C01. West meets East quietly and suddenly. The troubled Pacifica Foundation Radio Network has moved its headquarters from Berkeley, California to Washington. In response, of course, they basically got ran out of town in Berkeley after the lockout of KPFA. The leftist public network, which has five stations across the country, has been besieged by a nasty labor struggle over the past year, pitting the foundation's board of directors against its employees. The conflict has included the firing of longtime air personalities and frequent censorship of its own news programs that have tried to cover the troubles. WPFW 89.3 here in Washington, D.C. has been among the most egregious censors. The network says it moved east to put its staff closer to federal agencies and public interest groups based here. But consider this. Last summer, there was a 10,000-person free speech march against Pacifica in Berkeley. Here in the District of Columbia, WPFW has been relatively unbothered. Do the math. Okay, and one of our, well, let's see, before I get to that. Okay, also there has been coverage here in the New York City media as well. So nobody can argue that, this is not newsworthy and that it's mere airing of dirty laundry, but in fact it is making the mainstream media, and we would be remiss in failing to report on it over these airwaves. And one of the people who's been, there's now been coverage, I think, two articles in the New York Times, several in the Daily News, including one, of course, in the column of Juan Gonzalez, who is a producer on Democracy Now! And finally, there's been two now in Long Island Newsday. The most recent of which is by Peter Goodman. On the 8th of January, which was 2 days ago. And here, making a pun in the headline, which New York Newsday or Long Island Newsday is wont to do. This is from the Radio Waves column by Peter Goodman. Why WBAI should be left alone by Pacifica, with left in quotes. Ha ha ha, get it? And this story opens with two quotes. The first reads, Quote, my feeling is that a more beneficial disposition, and this should be a familiar quote to many listeners, my feeling is that a more beneficial disposition would be that of the New York Signal, as there is a smaller subscriber base, far more associated value, a dysfunctional staff, and an overall better opportunity to redefine Pacifica, close quote. And that quote is from Pacifica Foundation board member Michael Palmer's email to then-chairman Mary Frances Berry, July 12, 1999, concerning, of course, the pending privatization sale to a commercial, corporate radio network of WBAI, the free airwaves to which you are listening at this precise moment. And Michael Palmer, of course, is the Houston real estate developer and investor in Maquiladora sweatshops in northern Mexico, who for some reason unbeknownst to us sits on the national board of the Pacifica Foundation, that supposed bastion of left-wing radio. How do people like that ever get on the board? We'd like to know. All right, we'll get to that question later. All right, moving on to the second quote with which this Newsday article by Peter Goodman begins. Quote, you have asked questions in a hostile, combative, even disrespectful tone, and have never been able to combat the facts I have given you. And, of course, I think we all know where that quote comes from. That was President Bill Clinton to Amy Goodman of Pacifica's Democracy Now! Over the airwaves of WBAI on November 8th, 2000. Then we get to the text of Peter Goodman's story. If you want to know about the ruckus within the tiny leftist five-station Pacifica Foundation and its New York outlet, WBAI 99.5 FM, these two statements say it all. First, Palmer is suggesting that Pacifica sell WBAI, one of its two flagship stations, the other, of course, being KPFA Berkeley, to raise money and change the network. The foundation was created by conscientious objectors after World War II, whereas Palmer, now the board treasurer, is a real estate executive in Houston, where the Pacifica outlet is essentially a country western station. Second, there is Clinton, 25 minutes into an extraordinary grilling by Goodman, losing his temper at her impertinent questioning. Since then, Goodman has complained that her bosses have harassed her and tried to censor her program, Pacifica's most popular show. Most recently, but certainly not finally, there is the Christmas coup, quote-unquote, at WBAI, when Pacifica's executive director entered the offices late on the Friday before Christmas, changed the locks, fired the program director and a key producer, banned others, and temporarily barred workers, including Goodman. Needless to say, the dysfunctional staff and many listeners are in an uproar. What they fear, and what clearly appears to be happening, is that the national board, dominated by corporate executives and lawyers rather than unionists and social activists, as in the past, wants Pacifica to be a centrally run corporate organization, more interested in getting a larger audience by toning itself down. Less attitude, more obedience. Should anyone care, Pacifica, with five stations in some of the nation's biggest markets, doesn't even register in the ratings. The board leadership thinks it has become irrelevant, quote-unquote, and many industry pros agree. If the purpose of a radio station is to have listeners, a station without them has no reason for being. Pacifica's politics are outdated 60s leftovers, worthless in a 21st century where socialism is dead and the market rules. Very seductive arguments. Radio today is run by a handful of huge corporations. Pacifica stations, created when AM was king and FM frequencies went begging, are right in the middle of the commercial dial. They're worth a mountain of money. WBAI might bring $200 million or more on the open market, and a cash-starved foundation could do a lot with that, even buy a cheaper location and keep going. Where's the harm in running focus groups and giving more listeners what they want? It would be a disaster. Even a few people would know about it. The truth is that WBAI does give its listeners what they want. The mere fact that it manages to raise enough money to limp along without corporate underwriting or significant government support shows that enough people care about what they hear to write checks. Yes, the programming seems obsessive in its concern for fringe issues, but they're not always on the fringe. WBAI has been pounding for years at the restrictive Rockefeller drug laws. Just last week, Governor George Pataki announced plans for major reforms, and WBAI stalwarts Al Grandpa Lewis and retired New York City Police Detective Frank Serpico were prominent in the crowd in Albany. Most important, at a time when the national discourse is dominated by voices from the center and the right, the continuance of a truly left-wing organ, no matter how small, is extremely valuable. They paid for that microphone. Let them use it. So writes Peter Goodman in his Radio Waves column in the Long Island and Queens editions of Newsday on January 8th, 2001. And Peter Goodman's email address is, you can tell him exactly what you think, peter.goodman@newsday.com. That one's really easy to remember. peter.goodman@newsday.com. It is 12:34 a.m. in New York City, and you are tuned to listener-supported, non-commercial, under-siege, dysfunctional, intransigently left-wing WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm Bill Weinberg with Bob McGill at the controls, and this is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Continuing with our theme here of media under siege, one more thing to say about WBAI and Pacifica. Get your pen and pencil, your pen and paper ready, or your pencil and paper ready. And because one more thing to say about the BAI / Pacifica situation, and then we will move on to some analogous situations from other countries around the world. Okay, one of our ombudspersons in the listening audience contacted me to inform me that we gave an incorrect address for the to make donations to the fund for legal fees for the three lawsuits which are now pending against the Pacifica board, which are ultimately our best hope to get these rascals, these corporate lawyers and union busters and maquiladora investors and real estate developers off of the Pacifica board, where they do not belong. Those are the people we should be fighting. Here are those three lawsuits and how you can make a donation. First of all, there's the Umbrella Fund. The tax-deductible contributions in any amount that will be divided equally between all three lawsuits can be sent to Free Pacifica Legal Action / Vanguard Fund, 383 Rhode Island Street, Suite 301. That's 383 Rhode Island Street, Suite 301, San Francisco, California, 94103. You can also contribute to the lawsuit separately if you wish by sending contributions as followed. First, there's the Local Advisory Board, LAB, LAB. You ever wonder what LAB stands for? Now you know. Local Advisory Board. Each one of the Pacifica affiliates has one. The 21 LAB members from 4 of 5 Pacifica local station boards. Non-tax deductible contributions can be sent to Siegel and Yee Trust Account. That's S-I-E-G-E-L, Siegel and Yee, Y-E-E, Trust Account, 499 14th Street, Suite 220, Oakland, California, 94612. Oakland, California, 94612. All right, so that's the lab suit. Then there's also the Pacifica Director's suit, members of the National Board themselves who are suing the board. Two Pacifica Directors, Rob Robinson of WPFW and Aaron Craigle of KPFK, the Washington and Los Angeles affiliates, respectively, have launched the suit. And tax-deductible contributions can be sent to Kenneth N. Frucht Trust Account. Kenneth N. Frucht, F-R-U-C-H-T, Trust Account, 660 Market Street, Suite 300, San Francisco, California, 94104. And then finally, there is the listener lawsuit, the Pacifica listener sponsors from all five Pacifica stations. And if you want to donate to that suit, you can send your contributions to the Committee to Remove the Pacifica Board at 1136 Wild Rose Drive, 1136 Wild Rose Drive, Santa Rosa, California, 95401. And let's see. Well, all right, I think that'll do. All right, we're going to move on now. Some very interesting news clips about situations which I would dare say are somewhat analogous. Okay, first we're going to move down to the war-torn jungles of Colombia. Jungles of southern Colombia. Dateline. The DJ rests his Russian-made assault rifle across his knees, adjusts the dials on the console in front of him, and spins another compact disc. In a gloomy corner of an abandoned farm outhouse, a small green and yellow parrot called Hamil perches on an array of gadgets and trips along to a medley of tropical salsa tunes and 1960s protest songs. Outside, a 12-foot antenna sways in the breeze on top of a finger of mountain that rises high above the jungle canopy. This is Colombia's Rebel Radio. Against the state terrorism and Yankee intervention, this is the voice of resistance calling our exploited people. DJ Leandro Tovar cries into the microphone as he flicks through a stack of some 200 CDs. Tovar, the son of a Bogota pharmacist, dropped out of a computer studies course at college 2 years ago to join the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, FARC, Latin America's largest surviving 1960s Marxist guerrilla army, with some 17,000 combatants and control of up to 40% of the country. After carrying out clandestine political work in the capital, Tovar, in his early 20s, was moved into an 18 guerrilla unit that runs the transmitter of the FARC's Southern Bloc Fighting Division. Like Cuban songwriter Silvio Rodriguez sang, "The war of today is the peace of the future." And if there's a real reason, and if hunger is commonplace, then our war is justified, said Tovar, as he launched into a diatribe on social inequality and the root causes of the FARC's 36-year-old uprising to topple the state and usher in a socialist regime. "Here we are doing our shooting from the radio," Tovar added with a grin. In the last decade alone, Colombia's war, which has pitted communist guerrillas against right-wing paramilitary groups and state security forces, has claimed more than 35,000 lives, many of them civilians. Many observers believe the political violence will escalate further over the next few months after the United States decided to grant a $1.3 billion package of mostly military aid to help Colombia fight the booming drug trade in a bid to undermine one of the main pillars of FARC financing. Well, we can translate this double talk and actually say that the drug war is a cover for counterinsurgency. Your host, Bill Weinberg, adds parenthetically, "The Voice of Resistance broadcasts on 95.9 FM. Can you believe that? We broadcast on 99.5 and they broadcast on 95.9. 95.9 FM stereo to much of the southern Caquetá province. On a good day, the guerrillas say they can even manage to beam the signal into parts of neighboring Putumayo province. The transmitter is deep within a Switzerland-sized region of the southeast that President Andre Pastrana cleared of government security forces about 2 years ago to create a forum for peace talks between the government and the FARC. There has been no ceasefire outside the demilitarized zone, and the conflict has raged on. So far, there has been no agreement on a single item on the 12-point negotiating agenda. And in one corner of this makeshift radio shack, there is a pile of wooden boxes fitted with shoulder straps, just in case the slow-moving talks break down completely and the guerrillas have to pack up turntables, CD, and tape players and go on the run once again with their clandestine transmitter. After some 7 years dabbling on and off with radio and mixed results, the FARC is now firmly embarked on taking its revolution to the airwaves as well as the battlefield. The organization now has at least six rudimentary but highly mobile transmitters that broadcast from rebel strongholds throughout the country. In the near future, the FARC hopes to link up all the stations to provide a network with near nationwide coverage. This is a war within that war that is the propaganda war. We have the huge task of encouraging the struggle, said Ivan Perdomo, 33, one of the guerrilla commanders in charge of the rebel radio. All our actions are a cry against Yankee imperialism. We are the resistance against the rotten and corrupt regime. Perdomo, son of a former union leader at Colombia's leading soft drinks manufacturer, is a 15-year veteran of the FARC struggle. At present, Colombia has about 1,500 licensed radio stations, and authorities estimate there are similar numbers of pirate transmitters. The police and army have their own licensed radio networks. Outlaw ultra-right paramilitary squads have a clandestine transmitter in northwest Colombia, and the National Liberation Army, or ELN rebels, intermittently broadcast Radio Free Fatherland on a shortband radio. Most of the Voice of Resistance listeners in southern Colombia are impoverished peasants, many of whom eke out a living cultivating illegal plantations of coca leaf, the raw material for cocaine. The audience size is difficult to calculate, but weather conditions and the rugged terrain make it difficult to tune into other commercial stations except at night. The jingle between songs and a couple of short political slots each day are the only time the rebels deliver real harangues to their listeners. The rest of the day, from 5 a.m. to early morning, is taken up with a mixture of traditional Colombian music, harp pieces from the Eastern Plains, protest songs of Cuban Silvio Rodriguez and Pablo Milanesa, and accordion tunes from the cattle ranching north, where you can probably hear cumbias, similar to the ones we just played, and some commercial tropical sounds such as salsa and merengue. Many of the traditional Colombian rhythms have been adapted by FARC musicians who set them to more radical lyrics with revolutionary titles such as We Will Conquer, Ambush Rap, and Guerrilla Girls. This is a way of broadcasting our ideology using the language of music to talk to the people about social problems, Perdomo said. And you can read that in the Americas column, a weekly look at people and issues in Latin America, which you can find every Sunday in the pages of Newsday. And that was from December 24th, 2000. All right. And I've got one more clip that I want to read. This one from the Czech Republic, moving from South America to Central Europe. But before I do, one of our local station ombudspersons, Max Schmid, was just in here to inform me that there have been some developments. First of all, just in the interest of accuracy, apparent censorship of Peter Beauchamp's end-of-the-year sound collage may not have come directly from the top. We have to note, in the interest of accuracy here, there's some allegation that editing out of Amy Goodman's clips from the sound collage may have been at the request of Amy herself. In fact, there is the possibility that this was not censorship, which was mandated from the top down. I've been trying to get a statement from Peter himself on this situation. If Peter is in the listening audience tonight, I encourage him to answer the email which I sent him. Please, Peter, answer the email and let me know what is going on here so that we can inform our listeners with accuracy and a fastidious regard for the facts, which I would like to think is our trademark, because we can be opinionated and we can have a point of view, we can be passionate, but that is never, ever, ever an excuse for being fast and loose with the facts. So please, Peter, contact us. Either answer my email or give me a call on my voicemail at 212-631-1115. 212-631-1115. And also, when he was sticking his nose in here, the studio, Max Schmid also mentioned that there is an update in the lawsuit, in the legal front, against the Pacifica board. So, Max, if you are within range of my voice, as I am quite certain that you are, why don't you come on back into the studio and give us that update, because you mentioned that just as that hot cumbia from Valerio Longoria was about to end. So why don't you come on back in here and tell us what that is all about. And to give you an opportunity to do so, and to give me an opportunity to catch my breath before we move on to the hot news from Prague, why don't we play a next cut? Why don't we play the Corrido of Jacinto Ramos, cut 7. Here's Max. Max, before we go to this Corrido, do you want to tell us what's going on here?
Okay, I read this very hastily, so I hope I get everything straight. But apparently, it was more of an impression.
We're all being hasty tonight.
Carol Spooner, who was out here last week, and they had court hearings today about Pacifica's trying to get the court cases moved out of state court and into federal court. Their arguments apparently based on the fact that programming is governed by the FCC. The judge seemingly did not buy these arguments, and they are hopeful. He did not rule, but they are hopeful that the cases will be sent back to state court because the Pacifica Board is incorporated
in California.
California,
despite the fact that it's now based in Washington, D.C.
Yes, and the issues are around the changing of bylaws and illegal moves on the board to change its structure, which belongs in the state where the board is incorporated. So they just seemed hopeful. They thought the judge was, buying the side of the dissidents as opposed to the national elements. It may take 10 days before it's actually resolved, but it could be less.
Really? I'm sorry, which of the three suits is this?
I think it was two of the three suits. However, if the other ones are returned to state court, then they very likely will be combined into one lawsuit.
Okay, and the two in question are the
I'm not sure which
which of the three in the grab bag is it is.
No, I think the listener's suit is probably not the one that has been moved out of California. I'm just speculating,
because
that suit is based in California.
So really, we could be in an end game here. 10 days to a final decision?
Was
appealed.
Until the next phase of the trial. This is just a question of where the jurisdiction is and where the trial will be.
Gotcha. Well,
depositions have been going on. One of the reasons that many of the Dan Siegel was out here last week, they were deposing various New York elements on either side.
All right, so in 10 days we're going to find out if it's going to be in federal court or California state court.
Yes.
And we seem to be rooting for California state court.
Yes.
This would be to our advantage.
Absolutely.
Pourquoi?
Because the issues are about changing the bylaws.
And it's incorporated
illegally, and right. That's where exactly it.
Thank you, Max Schmid, for this update.
Another rebel update.
Okay.
Lockdown radio.
Another rebel update from lockdown radio, indeed. So, one thing I wanted to mention, we've also got somebody calling in with an update, and we're going to take that call after we go to the next cut from Valerio Longoria. One thing I wanted to mention, though, on the subject of these literally, you know, guerrilla radio stations which are in Colombia now, isn't it very, very interesting that just a year ago, there was a tremendous, you know, growing movement of micro transmitters or pirate, if you will, radio in this country. And then there were all of these, there were a series of federal raids against them and threats of further raids. At the same, that was the stick. At the same time, the federal government was dangling the carrot of new FCC regulations that they're going to daylight the micro broadcasters and allow them to operate legally. So, you know, the movement, the illegal, the pirate movement, sort of threw in the towel, you know, rather than subject themselves to getting busted when it looked like the whole microwave broadcasters were about to be, you know, daylighted anyway. You know, the movement went into retreat, and now there are comparatively few microtransmitters broadcasting in the United States of America. And lo and behold, Congress have just weighed in and said that, oh no, we can't allow the FCC to go ahead with this change of regulations. And in fact, the micro transmitters are going to remain illegal. Isn't it interesting? They basically pulled a bait and switch on the micro transmitter movement and manipulated it and maneuvered it into a state of abject retreat. At the same time that they pulled this little maneuver, they seem to be launching this attack on the autonomy of WBAI, one of the remaining free stations in the Pacifica network. Isn't it all very, very interesting? All right, 1 o'clock in the morning here on listener-supported, non-commercial, under siege WBAI. Bob, is that you? Bob, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Right on. Spill it, man.
Okay.
Identify yourself if you want to.
Hi, my name is Bob Letter. I'm the co-producer of the Health Action Program on WBAI and a supporter of the movement to reclaim the station. And tonight, Eileen Sutton, who is one of the banned WBAI news volunteers and is active with Pacifica Reporters Against Censorship, sent out a clarification on her earlier email, and I'm sorry if I missed it. Had you read her earlier email?
Yes.
Okay, so this is an update based on some questioning of the facts in her email that was done by one person today, and so she re-investigated it and spoke with more people, and I spoke with some people myself to verify things independently, and here's what she writes quickly. I spoke with Peter Beauchamp again today and others involved with the incident I wrote of yesterday. For clarification, Beauchamp's year-end highlights program aired three times, once on New Year's Eve, once on Democracy Now! On New Year's Day, and again later that day during Beauchamp's regular time slot. The first broadcast took place without any alteration of the program a few hours after Beauchamp dropped off the CD to station personnel. The second time it aired on Democracy Now! After Amy Goodman made one minor edit for which she got Beauchamp's explicit consent. The third time the program aired during Beauchamp's regular time slot on January 1st, according to Beauchamp, several alterations to his original program were made in the third airing, changes I referred to in my post yesterday, quote, and she's quoting herself here, when the show finally aired, roughly 1.5 minutes had been cut out of it without his knowledge or permission. And again, for those who weren't listening earlier, that was material from Utrice Lead describing her new status as station manager, and material from Amy Goodman describing the firings and bannings that has occurred. That's what got cut out or truncated. Back to Eileen's email. Beauchamp believes he was edited for content, as do I. I read this post to Beauchamp this evening, and he affirmed that this is an accurate record, and signed by Eileen Sutton.
Thank you very much, Bob.
You're welcome.
Very good. Well, we've got our ombudspersons out there in the listening audience paying attention. Right on.
Okay, we'll keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, great. With that, I still encourage, Peter, if you're out there listening, respond to my email. I want to hear from the horse's mouth what's going on here. All right. Moving on to another case of media under siege. This one appeared in the New York Times on December 29th. Is anybody aware of what's going on in the Czech Republic, in Prague right now? major crisis with the with the biggest television station there, the public television station. Headline reads, "Static screens of Czech TV mirror deep political problem." Dateline, Prague, January 28th. A dispute over a new director blacked out state television briefly this week. I should say a lot of this is going to sound eerily familiar, okay? All right, Dateline, Prague, December 28th. A dispute over a new director blacked out state television briefly this week and has brought thousands of demonstrators into the streets, dragged in the president, and raised serious questions about the Czech Republic's politics as it pushes to join the European Union. On one level, what knocked Czech television's two public channels off the air is a fight between a new boss and employees who are nervous about editorial independence and their jobs and who have barricaded themselves in the newsroom. But on another level, it is a telling lesson in the murkiness of post-communist politics here. There's that New York Times rhetoric. I just love it. So condescending. No, this has nothing to do with us here in the West. On whether a telling lesson in the murkiness of post-communist politics here, where the main opposition party lies cozily in bed with the government 11 years after the Velvet Revolution overturns communism. Quote, "The real issue here isn't about a labor dispute, but about a basic conflict in Czech society," says Jiří Pehe, an advisor to President Václav Havel, who has backed the rebel journalists. "The question is whether public television should really serve everyone or whether it should be a tool for the political parties in power. The battle began at Christmas with the appointment of the fourth director of Czech television in 2.5 years, Jiří Hodák, the former head of Czech language section of the BBC, who was legally, if abruptly, appointed by the Czech Television Council, which is named by Parliament. Mr. Hodák had resigned from state television in August after four tumultuous months as news director, where he was perceived as being too close to the former Prime Minister Václav Klaus, who was the head of the conservative opposition party, the Civic Democrats, the most popular party in the country. So when Mr. Hodák was suddenly brought back as director this month after his predecessor was fired, and then hired as a news director who was an advisor to Mr. Klaus, the local news staff rebelled. The journalists locked themselves in the newsroom and began broadcasting their own news programs, calling for support. In a statement, they said, quote, "All of us face a danger that before elections, which are due in 2002, Czech TV will become an obedient instrument of the people who are in power." Mr. Hodák promised to maintain editorial independence and said he would cooperate with the journalists. After they rebuffed him, Mr. Hodák and his, actually I think it's Hodach, excuse me, Mr. Hodák and his news director, Jana Babo Sikova, fired 20 people who paid no attention and called on the police to clear the newsroom. Called on the police to clear the newsroom. Get that? The police have so far refused to act, to their credit, nor have they interfered with the several thousand people who demonstrate each evening outside the television station in support of the rebel journalists. Is this ringing any bells, listeners? So on Wednesday night, this being the Wednesday before December 29th, so on Wednesday night, Mr. Hodák pulled the plug. putting up on the screen a defensively worded slide about the protesters and saying there would be no broadcast until the Parliamentary Council decided in favor of the rebels or the management. My God, this is like deja vu all over again, eh? From Berkeley to Prague, eh? You know what I'm saying? Quote, if somebody seizes the property of Czech television and produces his own unauthorized programs, then it is my duty to act, Mr. Hodach said. The protesters are trying to broadcast their news programs by satellite and cable. Czechs, who pay about $2 a month as a license fee, were angry. And the council gave only lukewarm support to management. So tonight, 24 hours later, Mr. Hodach relented, putting recorded programming, including a film of the musical Cats, back on the air, but not the news. There were also periodic blackouts. Three private stations, not pirate, but private stations, remain on the air. So once again, you know, you've got... you know, the public airwaves, the airwaves which ostensibly belong to the listeners, in trouble, while, you know, the private stations are filling the void, so to speak. Private power taking over public power. Same story all over the world, isn't it? In another slide, which was broadcast on Czech TV, he, Mr. Hodach, appealed to Czech authorities for aid, saying, quote, the Director General urgently appeals to the Czech Republic's bodies to help restore legal broadcast by putting an end to the illegal action using all appropriate means. President Havel threw his support behind the rebels and against Mr. Hodach. He said the abrupt changes in management, though legal, violated the spirit of the law, quote-unquote. He also called the situation immensely dangerous, quote-unquote, and compared it to the turmoil that led to the communist takeover of Czechoslovakia in 1948, which, as he pointed out, was also legal. Mr. Havel is widely known to despise Mr. Klaus, who returns the favor, and the two men have been trying to undercut each other for years. Mr. Klaus would like to succeed Mr. Havel as president in 2002 and has worked with the current prime minister, Milos Zeman, of the Social Democrats, to reduce Mr. Havel's powers. Mr. Zeman and Mr. Klaus have what is known as an opposition agreement, meaning that Mr. Klaus will not have his party vote in parliament to overturn the government. Mr. Zeman's party did not do well in this year's Senate elections, and this coalition of convenience lost its majority in the upper house, making Mr. Klaus's election by parliament as the next president less likely. Mr. Pehe, the advisor to Mr. Havel, suggests that Mr. Zeman then agreed to let Mr. Klaus and his allies take control of the television and the only institution capable of, take control of the television and install Mr. Hodach after another candidate was accused of corruption. All right, that is to say that, Pehe, who's the advisor to President Havel, said that Zeman of the Social Democratic Party agreed to let Mr. Klaus, that is to say Vaclav Klaus, and his allies take control of the television and install Mr. Hodach after another candidate was accused of corruption. Okay, this gets very, very internecine here. But basically, the public airwaves have become political football. That's what's going on. And once again, doesn't this all sound familiar? But now the head of Mr. Zeman's party, that is to say the Social Democrats, nervous over the rebellion at the television station and the popular reaction, has suggested that Mr. Hodach resign, as have members of Mr. Klaus's party. An editorial in the daily Mlada Fronta Dnes newspaper said the struggle of the journalist was justified, if illegal, adding, quote, their rebellion is the defense of principles that form the basis for the spread of free, unbiased information. Irina Valova, chairwoman of the Syndicate of Journalists of the Czech Republic, said with 4,000 members, said that Mr. Hodach was a terrible choice, but that the journalists had responded with a very emotional reaction, unprofessional and amateur. There's that word, unprofessional again. Yet more echoes of the Pacifica crisis, if you will. She agrees, that is to say, Irina Volova, the chairwoman of the Syndicate of Journalists of the Czech Republic, agrees with their concerns, but not their tactics, she said. They could have gone on strike, Ms. Volova said. And she has supported calls for an emergency session of the parliament, now scheduled for January 3rd, to change the law and appoint a new television council of more independent people. A large demonstration has also been called for January 3rd in Wenceslas Square. And, in fact, that happened, as I know from updates. Even if Mr. Hodach heeds calls to resign, Ms. Volova said, quote, the only solution is now a political solution, and the only institution capable of a solution is the parliament. Just as here, ultimately, the only institution capable of a real long-term solution to the crisis at Pacifica is the courts, the judiciary. As for Mr. Havel's intervention, she said, it's fueling the fire with petrol. Mr. Havel, quote, has no means to do anything and knows his controversial position on the Czech political scene. Yeah, well, he's only the president. Mr. Klau favors privatizing both state-run channels. Once again, a specter we're all too familiar with here. In the Pacifica crisis, Mr. Vaclav Klaus favors privatizing both state-run channels, which would cut against European standards of public broadcasting intended to protect minorities and access. Martin Skyba, head of the Czech Film and Television Union, said privatizing the television station would be, quote, the most serious effort to weaken public broadcasting since 1989. The problem, Ms. Volova and Mr. Pehe agree, is the coziness among Czech politicians, many of whom moved seamlessly from the communist days into economic and political power, controlling major companies, banks, and media outlets. The only way to change the law governing Czech television, said Mr. Pehe, the only way out is to change the law governing Czech television, said Mr. Pehe. It now gives too much room for political parties to bypass the spirit of the law. End quote. Every former communist country has to go through this difficult process, Mr. Pehe said. Politicians need to understand they need to keep their hands off public interest institutions. Well, I would say that this is not merely a dilemma for the post-communist world, but a dilemma for us here in the capitalist West as well. I echo those sentiments wholeheartedly. Politicians need to understand that they need to keep their hands off public interest institutions, as do the forces of private capital. And one thing which makes this situation in Czechoslovakia, or excuse me, the Czech Republic, as it's now known, extremely historic and extremely interesting is that the villain here, the, censorious bad guy who purging the media of disloyal elements, is no longer, some post-communist Stalinoid, but is actually Vaclav Klaus, who did not come out of the communist apparatus, but in fact is darling of Western capital. And is the so-called economic advisor who, after sitting out the Velvet Revolution, insinuated himself into the top levels of power in Czechoslovakia and in the Czech Republic, and led the crash conversion from socialism to market capitalism in the Czech Republic. So I think there's a very, very clear lesson here that the threat to free speech, even in the post-communist world, no longer comes predominantly from, these old communist apparats. It comes from the forces of the so-called free market and so-called neoliberalism, etc., etc. Very, very interesting. Okay, an update. There have been a lot of big demonstrations in Wenceslas Square, including that one on January 3rd, in support of the journalists. The journalists are still at this moment, I believe, in control of the television newsroom. And the day after the big protest in Wenceslas Square, this Hodach character who precipitated this whole crisis, but you know, when he was appointed the new director of Czech Public TV, and apparently the pawn of the neoliberal mastermind Václav Klaus, puppet master, this Hodach character suffered some kind of nervous collapse the day after the big demonstration in Wenceslas Square. So I've got, this is from today's Radio Free Europe online service. And the headline is Hodach released from hospital. But actually there's more interesting news than that. Hodach was released on January 8th from the Prague medical facility where he was hospitalized on January 4th for exhaustion, quote unquote. And doctors said he will continue to receive treatment at home. The private security services hired by him on December 31st stopped guarding the entry to the television newsroom later on January 8th. Okay, so did you hear that? This Hodach character, who was unilaterally, in a top-down manner, appointed the director of Czech Public TV, hired private security services to guard the entry to the TV newsroom. Is this all starting to sound really, really familiar to y'all? You know what I'm saying here? Anyway, fortunately, the private guards are out at Czech TV. I wish we could say the same for WBAI here. Are there still private guards around here? Actually, if they're still here today, they've taken a far less visible presence than they have the last 2 weeks that I was in here. Anyway, to continue with the... to continue with this news clip from Radio Free Europe online service. The private security guards are out of the television newsroom. Members of the strikers committee welcomed the step, but said they will not leave the newsroom until all their demands are met, including, quote, a halt of censorship by Hodach, his departure as TV director, and the resignation of the television council. End quote. New public rallies in support of the strikers are planned for January 11th in Prague. That is to say, tomorrow, or the day after tomorrow, depending on how you look at it, and several other cities in the Czech Republic. The rallies are to use as a slogan a toast made by the famous film director Miloš Forman on Czech TV on New Year's Eve. Politicians, enough is enough. And we echo that sentiment here on the free airwaves of WBAI, free but under siege airwaves of WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York City. Enough is enough. Solidarity East and West. We extend our solidarity here from the free but besieged airwaves of WBAI to the besieged airwaves of Czech Public Television. And we extend our solidarity to the striking, locked in rather than locked out, journalists of Czech Public TV. Hang in there, brothers and sisters. If anybody out there in the listening audience has got an update on what's happening with the television journalists in the Czech Republic, let us know. Drop us a line here at 120 Wall Street. What's the zip code down here? Do we know what the zip code down here is? That's the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade on WBAI. Where on earth? I know I've got it somewhere here in my address book. Yeah, the zip code is 10005, 120 Wall Street, 10005, to the attention of Bill Weinberg, Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. All right, we're going to go out with one more cut from that same CD, Caballo Viejo. We're going to get to the other CD next week. We're going to go out with cut 8, which is the title cut, Caballo Viejo, Old Horse, Por Supuesto. There's the other CD that I've got from Valerio Longoria. Texas Conjunto Pioneer, the late Valerio Longoria, actually contains some protest music and some songs with drug references, which is something we're always a sucker for here on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. So we'll be playing some of that other Valerio Longoria CD called Tejano Roots next week. And also that... where was it? That obituary of Valerio Longoria in the New York Times mentioned as one of his mentors, Narciso Martinez, who pioneered conjunto music back in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. And I've also, in the course of my research, I've also dug up some of Narciso Martinez's music, which we'll be playing in the weeks to come. So we're going to go deeper and deeper and deeper here on this little excursion at the Tex-Mex conjunto music. Next week, we're going to be playing some more Valerio Longoria. Maybe the week after that, we'll be playing some Narciso Martinez, who was Valerio's mentor from the previous generation of conjunto music. So stay tuned. It's going to be great. Stick with us as long as we still have a show here on the free but besieged airwaves of listener-supported non-commercial WBAR 99.5 FM. This has been the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade with me, Bill Weinberg, Bob McGill at the controls, our sometime co-host Anne-Marie Hendrickson may be joining us next week. Stay tuned for Weaponry coming up next, and... Assalamu alaikum.